Well, my background as a retired Army officer with almost 31 years of service, one of the things that I was exposed to during my active duty service was the importance of having weapons and equipment at work that our warfighters can use that'll allow them to be dominant on the battlefield. And we found out, and this is my personal experience in Iraq in 2004, we found out that a lot of our soldiers were having to make their own, provide their own up-armored Humvees with the kind of armor they needed to protect against improvised explosive devices. American steelmakers rose to the occasion and developed very quickly solutions to that. And we saw that in Iraq and Afghanistan, where American steelmakers everything for the military goes to the very front of the production line. We're able to give the troops the protection they needed against explosive devices. And of course, we saw the carnage that was being shown against our troops in 2004 was reduced over time because we came up with better armor for our soldiers. I saw that myself. I remembered that when I left active duty in 2007, one of the research projects that I wanted to get involved with was what are the vulnerabilities of our defense industrial base? And one of the key vulnerabilities of our defense industrial base is the risk to our own steel industry from foreign imports, overcapacity, especially by China, but Russia as well, and there are others, but they're the major offenders. China's got more than 50% of the global steel market. When they drive the prices down through overcapacity, it means our own producers cannot compete. So that's why I'm concerned. I want to see our domestic steel industry, I want to see it thrive, not just survive. I want to see it thrive as it can, because we make the best steel in the world. But from a national security perspective, we make the steel that we have to have for our most advanced combat systems, ground, air, and naval. And it would be a tragedy. It would be it's unacceptable for us to lose the ability to make steel for our weapon systems.
And there is a federal investigation underway into all of this, correct? Section 232?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Can you explain more about that?
Sure. The Section 232 investigation was initiated by the Department of Commerce to look at the impact of the import of steel. And that's off the table for today, but there's a separate 232 investigation to look at the national security impact of the import of aluminum, which is also suffering from, again, Chinese overcapacity. The 232 investigation held hearings in the third week of May in D.C. At the Department of Commerce, when it was opened in, I want to say, late April of this year, they have 270 days to come back with the results of the investigation. Secretary of Commerce Ross said at the hearing his intent was to come back with a completed investigation well prior to that. So those of us who care about the survival of our steel industry, hope that it is certainly much sooner than 270 days, which would put it into January. The hearings that we had in D.C., there were nearly 40 speakers at the hearing. I was one of them. There were many other representatives from industry, and there were representatives from other countries. For example, China and Russia came to the hearing and they gave their testimony. The bottom line is Section 232 took testimony from these number of experts in the field, and the idea is to study those testimonies as well as all the other information available on the impact of imports of steel on our national security. And then produce a result and recommendation of what we should do. First of all, answer the yes or no question: is there an impact? I think that's pretty clear there is. But then, what should we do? What are the recommended remedies, either tariff or non-tariff remedies, to address this what we believe is a negative impact of the import of steel?
And this is something that both Ohio Senators Sherrod Brown and Rob Portman have jumped into and written a letter to the Commerce Department asking to either speed up this investigation or to make sure that it's seen all the way through. Tell me your thoughts on that. Have you been in contact with either of our senators here in Ohio?
I've met both of them, not in the last few months, but I have met both of them. I've talked with, in this case, Senator Brown about the import of steel and his concerns about that. And I applaud both of them for working in a bipartisan fashion to address this national security issue. I think that the importance of the issue from a Ohio perspective is obvious because almost every part of Ohio is related in some way to the steel industry, and it's a huge part of Ohio's economy. But they get it from a national perspective as well. And I know, again, from conversations with Senator Brown, he really understands the national security aspects of it. Now, I live in Florida. I have a lot of friends and family in Ohio. But I look at it as a national issue, something that's going to affect our ability to provide our warfighters with the equipment that they need. Mm-hmm. And if I can throw something in, you know, really, the Ohio steel industry has suffered a lot over the past 15 years or so, that we're producing at vastly diminished capacity compared to where we were in 2000. The issue of capacity is really important here. Once we lose steel production capacity, it's really hard, if not impossible, to rebuild it. And it's not just the plants. It's not just the production. It's the skilled workers. It's the loss of the research and development. Those are the things that are just absolutely critical to preserve. Capacity is something that's very fragile. It's really I don't want to put a percentage on it where we were in now versus 10 years ago, and this is 2006 numbers actually. We produced 125 million tons of steel. Our last year we produced 85 million. We've got to reverse that trend or we're going to lose capacity permanently. I mean, we've got the best trained workers, the best facilities, the best run facilities in the world. That's not the issue. The issue is we've got to be able to compete on the global market because that's what governs the price. And if everything, if China, for example, produces steel at well below market value that they keep driving the prices lower and lower by producing more steel. And they're not competing on a level playing field. They subsidize their steel industry. They want to capture the global market share. That's what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And it's not even for profit because, as you know, China is not a market economy. They don't work off the basis of profit. It's command directed. But they do need to keep their workers employed. And and as you probably know, also it's related to the ongoing political problems that they have in China. They have real turmoil, political turmoil in China. And one of the problems is if they let their workers go, and the steel industry is one of their big employers, there's going to be bigger problems for China. So for their own reasons, this command-directed economy has decided to subsidize the production of steel in China and the export to other countries. And one of the major parts of the world that they're trying to drive the prices down is right here in the United States.
It seems like there could be some issues with our own tariff and trade systems here in the States. Can you talk about any challenges there?
Well, I think anytime you try to put tariffs on trade, it's a risk. I mean, I think most economists and I think most Americans want as much a free trade system as possible, but it's also got to be fair. If you're competing against a producer such as China, which does not compete fairly on the global market, they do subsidize their industries, have their own huge tariffs on everything from cars to raw production of materials. We don't do that. I mean, we eschew tariffs. And if I can just digress for a second and talk about, people talk about, for example, Adam Smith and The Wealth of Nations, which was written in that wonderful year, 1776. Adam Smith was the first to really outline in detail the importance of free trade. And I think that is looked at, I mean, we've come a long way since 1776, but free trade is still seen as sort of the benchmark for how to run an effective economy and effective trade relations, effective economic relations among countries. But he had two major exceptions to free trade. One was you've got to be able to produce your own Royal Navy ships, because that is what guarantees the national security of Britain. And again, let's go back to the 1700s. That was what national security was all about, was the British ability to protect their against their ships. And you've also got to counter other countries that produce tariffs. And in his case, in the context of 1770s, Britain and France were the major competitors. They didn't know who we were yet. They were thinking, oh, these colonists are going to go away. But the real issue is the two exceptions that Adam Smith had, even in his embryonic conception of the importance of free trade for a vital economy, the two exceptions were national security, and you can't let somebody conduct a trade war against you without responding. And I don't think it's good for the United States. I certainly wouldn't want to become a command economy like China. I love our system, and I think most of us are very comfortable with the capitalist system, and nobody's talking about changing that. Nor do we want to get away from the free trade regime that we have that's been so successful for our economy and for, frankly, the global economy. But when we've got a violator like China, which doesn't play by the rules, which subsidizes its key industries, which imposes a raft of tariffs against other countries that import to it, we've got to respond. And we've got to think about what's important for our national security. That's what I think we should keep our eyes on.
The president has spoken out about China's practices on the national or international stage, and you have been among the speakers before the Department of Commerce. What is the best case scenario or result? What do you want from them following this investigation?
I would like to see the Department of Commerce decide, first of all, that indeed there is a negative impact on national security from imports of steel into the United States. I think and from that will follow the ability to remedy that. And I think the first thing we ought to do to remedy is we've got to have an opportunity for our own U.S. producers to recapture lost market share, and more important, perhaps rebuild our broken supply chains, which we have. We also need to take a broad view of what steel products are necessary for national security. Most of us think about, when we think about steel and national security, we think about ships and tanks, and we should, because they use their major users of steel. We're going to talk about steel that's used for our logistical and critical infrastructure, everything from electrical grid and transformers to rail networks, underground water systems to bridges. That's national security too. How could we conduct our business as a country and preserve our own independence without a good electrical grid? Well, steel goes into that. And then we've got to also look at all the imports of steel, not just the raw steel imports, but also the finished steel imports. That's really critical, because if we put tariffs or restrictions of some sort, or we negotiate a reduction of imports into the United States of raw steel, we've still got countries that'll take the raw steel and produce finished products and then send them to the United States, which evades basically the whole idea of trying to keep our industry afloat. And then we've got to have, and we can work with our allies on this. I mean, our allies in Europe have the same problem as we do with the Chinese overcapacity. And as you probably know, there's talks going on in Europe right now, hosted in Europe, about how do we address Chinese overcapacity in the Western world. And I don't presume to judge the outcome of those talks, but we've got to do something together with other countries that are having the same problem that we do to reduce this, you know, vast import of Chinese overproduction. There's got to be rules to counter this anti-competitive behavior. And I think we can get some agreement with other countries on that. I don't know what the Department of Commerce position going into those talks is, but I presume that's a big part of it. And then the second thing is we've got our own trade enforcement laws. I mean, we can bring cases to the World Trade Organization, trade cases to the World Trade Organization. We ought to be aggressive about doing that. I know we have in the past had some disappointing rulings from the WTO on trade enforcement, but that's no reason for us to not continue to do that. Bottom line is we've got to act, either tariffs or non-tariffs, before our plants are forced to close, because once that happens, we lose the capacity forever.
Brigadier General John Adams, U.S. Army retired, is with Guardian 6, a defense and national security solutions research and analysis firm. General, thanks for your time today and all the information.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, and thank you for doing the job to get the word out, Jerry. I appreciate it very much.